This is Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome, everybody, to Prop Points. Jeff Erickson here with Nick Whalen. It's All-Star Tuesday. It's a quiet live sports day. Not so much, though, because we got a World Cup semifinal later today. We got two awesome guests. It's Double Yes Tuesday. John McKechnie from RotoWire is going to join us, talk some NFL and college football with us, some futures there. Excited about that one. Adam Zdroek runs all of our soccer coverage at RotoWire. He's going to help us preview today and tomorrow from the World Cup, review what we've seen so far. We're going to break down the home run derby, and we're going to break down the NFC divisions today a little bit, along with the AFC West. We got a lot of previewing still left to do. Nick Whalen, let's start, though, with the home run derby. Modified format, won by Jordan Walker, beating hometown favorite Kyle Schwarber last night. Pretty good performance. A lot of good positive reviews on the format itself, too.
Yeah, well, first of all, Jeff, I would be remiss. You know, we do have actually a live event ongoing right now. For some reason, there is a WNBA game. I believe this is one of those games that they play early in the day, so like kids at summer camp can attend. But the Connecticut Sun are currently leading the Portland Fire 86-83, under 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter. So we'll keep you posted on that. Look, Jeff, I think the format worked out last night. I think there was a little bit of nostalgia, perhaps, going back to the days where, you know, you had a certain number of outs. Now, this was a little bit different because you had a certain number of swings, whereas in the past, you know, you only burned an out if you did not hit a home run. Last night, we, of course, saw home runs count toward that swing total, but I thought it did well to move the event along. I thought it did well to, you know, limit the fatigue for players, which I think, you know, it's kind of part of the game with the home run derby, right? You know, that you need that endurance as you advance from round to round, but it was kind of getting a little out of hand where it's like, it's working against players who continue to hit home runs, right? Where it's like, okay, I've reached the total that I need to get. I want to keep hitting home runs because that's what the fans want to see, but it doesn't necessarily help me as I go deeper into the contest. So I thought this added a really interesting kind of competitive element and ended up being a big win. I mean, I saw almost nobody complaining about this on social media last night, Jeff, which, as you know, especially when it comes to all-star games in sports, is incredibly rare.
Yeah, especially because the general response to any change is bad. So, yeah, absolutely there. Some good performances all around. You know, the Philly home crowd was all behind Kyle Schwarber, and that was fun. Wilson Contreras, you know, getting led in round one, tied with Walker, and had the longer home run. So at 490 feet, he had one of the longer ones of the day. Junior Caminero had a 491 footer there. So I thought that was interesting. You know, my left-hander theory, that crashed and burned pretty hard. We had three out of the four semifinalists were right-handers there. So much for that. Jack Kags, he didn't like crash and burn. We've seen players hit like 3-4 home runs in the home run derby before in that first round. He didn't do anything like that, hit 8, but still did not make it that far. You were closer. Your guy Caminero made it to the semis and came close, actually, but still, yeah. Jordan Walker, fun breakout season for him, continued on for that. And this is a guy that went undrafted in some leagues this year.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you, Jeff, because we have a great page over at rotowire.com. If you're a fantasy baseball head, where you can look at earned auction values. And I think it's probably the best way to gauge in-season fantasy value. And if you look at it right now, Jacob Mizorowski has been the most valuable player in fantasy baseball, pitchers or hitters, of course. James Wood is number two. Yordan Alvarez is number three. Who's number four but Jordan Walker? And, you know, this kind of feels like, you know, winning the home run derby now, officially announcing that Jordan Walker is back as a legitimate star in Major League Baseball. Obviously a big time prospect when he came up, had a nice rookie year, had really fallen off over the last few seasons. But, you know, as you mentioned, Jeff, he was going undrafted in a lot of fantasy baseball leagues this past year. I mean, if you were doing an early 2027 draft right now, how high is he going?
I would say in the second round would be my guess, but that might be light. I mean, he has 13 stolen bases to go with this big power breakout. Leads baseball, 74 RBI, leads baseball in all the hard hit metrics as well. So it's supported. This breakout is supported by that. He's improved his strikeout rate. The Cardinals are a competitive team around him that's helped as well. You know, I might have to, I think we may need to do a too early set of 2027 rankings to really properly answer that question. But I think you could make a case for him being in the first round. Absolutely, for sure. There, because he's running more and because he's providing the batting average that goes with it. I think it is noteworthy, Nick. Looking at those earned auction values over at rotowire.com, you can check that out for yourself. Use promo code VEAS and get a 15% discount off any RotoWire subscription. There are no first rounders in the like top 10 players. The hot, you know, you get the Shohei, who's pretty close to the top 10 in terms of earned auction value, but and there's plenty of second and third rounders, but there are no first rounders. The first round was a disaster this year.
It has been. It has been. And, you know, a lot of those guys who, you know, were maybe in the conversation at the 1-2 turn, and, you know, a lot of second and third round guys are doing really well. But you're right. It's kind of been crash and burn for a lot of the guys at the top of the board. And obviously injuries have been a big part of that. But will be interesting to see, you know, how that impacts the fantasy baseball market next year. And, you know, with Walker specifically, it's such an interesting case because this isn't totally out of nowhere, right? He has the prospect pedigree to imply that this was the type of player that he could be. So I could certainly see some people saying, okay, we weren't even drafting this guy last year. All of a sudden now we're saying he's a first round pick. You know, maybe we have to meet in the middle, but you know, there, when you have that pedigree, that always sticks with you, right? You see it in every sport. Guys who are a first round pick in the NBA tend to hang around even when they have no business hanging around the NBA, because there's always going to be that team that thinks, you know, we can unlock what we once saw in this guy as a prospect. And yeah, I think this is a kind of a good learning situation to not give up, because I think the Cardinals were probably pretty close to giving up on Jordan Walker prior to this year.
And maybe that's all. Keep in mind, they also changed general managers this season as well. And so there might be more of a directive like, hey, leave him alone. Let him play. I'll give you, and you know, let's keep in mind, Jordan Walker barely had any time at the high minor league levels there. He made the team out of a dynamic spring training, and they moved positions on him. He came up as a third baseman. All of a sudden, he's a young player, very young player. I think he debuted at age 21 in a different position with very little upper-level minor league experience there. Of course, he struggled. And then he got jerked around in terms of the playing time, had a loss of confidence. I'll give you another comp. Cam Smith on the Astros, up to 12 homers now, and he's had half of those in the last four or five weeks. Keep an eye on Cam Smith. He might be the next breakout guy in that sort of way. So anyways, All-Star game is tonight. Christopher Sanchez versus Dylan Cease. Had a lot of pitchers withdraw from this. Cam Schlittler, Shohei Ohtani, Jacob Mizorowski. Zach Wheeler felt like a fifth wheel, didn't want to be a fifth option there after not making the initial cut. And some of that was structural because there's an innings requirement there that he fell just short of. Still, it depends on how you think the All-Star game should be, but I thought that was kind of sad that he couldn't make the All-Star game. But at any rate, excuse me.
Bless.
Very dramatic moment there.
Oh,
we're missing out on some big names. It's not quite the Pro Bowl, but we're missing out on some big names.
Yeah, we are. That's just how it works on the pitching side. Honestly, you know, it's interesting with, you know, Schlittler and Mizorowski specifically, where it's almost like the team's success, you know, kind of tends to limit their ability to pitch in the All-Star game. Like, you don't want to mess anything up in terms of what you're pursuing as a team. You know, you're not going to, you know, kind of rejigger the rotation or anything ahead of the All-Star break to make sure a guy can get in there when you're more focused on winning games. So yeah, you know, it's something we see in most sports, right? Maybe not so much the NBA, but like you said, the Pro Bowl, you got guys dropping out all over the place, but should still be plenty of star power on display in Philly tonight, where we have Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber, by the way, as co-favorites for All-Star Game MVP.
You want to bet smarter? Then you need RotoWire. Our brand new smart money tool shows you exactly where the sharp action is moving, so you're always on the right side of the line. And that's just the start. RotoWire's award-winning staff delivers rankings, projections, real-time injury updates, and data-driven insights across every sport, every day. Whether you're handicapping games, crushing your fantasy league, or both, RotoWire has you covered. Head to rotowire.com right now and use promo code VEASAN at checkout for 15% off any RotoWire product. That's rotowire.com, promo code VSIN. Nick, you tweeted out something this morning about the top four picks in the NBA draft. Not, you know, the last time we've had the top four picks all make at least one All-Star game, 1970. It looks like we might get that this year.
I want to be very, very careful to not overreact to what is less than a week of Summer League, but all these guys look great, man. Devonta looks great. Peterson looks great. Boozer looks exactly as expected. And I think Caleb Wilson looks even better than we thought so far. Even with a bit of a rough shooting night last night, you still see the wow plays. I mean, the three-point shooting for Wilson has been unbelievable. But yeah, this was something I was thinking about was, you know, almost always, if you look back at the NBA draft, almost always you get at least one true bust in the top four. Yep. Sometimes you get two, sometimes you get three. You almost never see all four players like truly pan out. And there are a few exceptions where even if somebody didn't make an all-star game, you know, they became a very good NBA player. But on balance, this is extremely rare. You know, right now it feels almost inconceivable that any of these top four guys wouldn't go on to stardom in the NBA. And I will say, look, even at the 2025 class right now, where you have Cooper Flagg, Dylan Harper, VJ Edgecombe, Con Kniple, totally in the realm of possibility that those four guys could make an all-star game. So maybe we'll see that trend end up being bucked here. But yeah, I did the research, Jeff, one by one. I looked at every draft, and it was not until 1970 where we had the top four picks all go on to make at least one all-star game at some point in their NBA career.
Yeah, even 1984, which produced Akeem, produced Michael Jordan, Charles Barkley, John Stockton, even Sam Perkins, smooth Sam Perkins. It still had Sam Bowie as the number two pick. And, you know, Sam Bowie might have been a great player, but we'll never know because he had too many injuries and he flamed out. That's the thing. Even elite draft classes have that one bogey.
Yeah, I think everybody, yeah, I've seen a lot of comparisons to the 2003 class, which is, of course, LeBron, Melo, Wade, Chris Bosh. If you want to throw Chris Kaman in there as well, yeah, I believe he made an all-star team. But who went number two? Darko Milicic, right? So there are a lot of classes where, you know, you have three of the four hit, and then there's always that outlier. But I don't think that's happening in this class. You know, maybe some sort of injury situation will pop up, but all four of those guys looking fantastic so far in Las Vegas. We're going to have our friend John McKechnie joining us on the Progressive Guest Line when we come back. We'll talk some college football futures, some NFL futures with John. You're watching Prop Points here on VSiN.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools, but what they don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you'll get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Nick Whale and Jeff Erickson back with you. It's the Tuesday edition of Prop Points here on VSiN, the sports betting network. A little bit of a slow week in the sports world, although we do have a World Cup semifinal later this afternoon. We have the MLB All-Star game tonight. But bottom line is we get to talk some NFL futures this week. And to help us out today, we have our friend John McKechnie, one of our NFL analysts, our best ball guru over at rotowire.com, joining us via the Progressive Guest Line. John, we'll talk some NFL. You're a big college football guy as well, so we get some early leans from you there. But let's start in the National Football League and a market that I would imagine doesn't see a ton of volume, should probably see more volume because it's a fun one. Fewest wins in the 2026 NFL season. You have identified a certain team in the NFC West.
I'm taking the favorite on this one. I like the Arizona Cardinals at plus 250 to have the worst record in the NFL. It is a house of horrors out there. It is a bad roster, a coach with a, you know, kind of shaky track record. Like you're not exactly like expecting them to light it up offensively. They're going through like a big identity shift as far as their offense is concerned. You know, like they just threw it constantly last year, led the league in a passing rate over expected by a wide margin. They obviously spent the number three pick on Jeremiah Love. So how is this all going to mesh? It's going to be such like an extreme change going from so pass happy to trying to kind of jam in the run game. And, you know, if you were setting a market for team that's going to start the most quarterbacks this year, it's got to be the Cardinals as the favorite. And then the cherry on top is that the Cardinals have the hardest schedule in the NFL this year. So all of those factors combined, I have a really hard time seeing anyone outperform them as far as being the worst team in the NFL every single week this year.
We're doing a lot of divisional talk this week here, setting divisional odds and all that. And one of the things we have talked about is the contrast in schedules. And of course, the Cardinals get their own division on top of everything else that goes with their. How important, when we're looking at wins, we're looking at divisional odds, how important is schedule for you? How accurate is our estimation of those schedules? How much does that factor in for you?
It's important. And, you know, I think especially in the early part of the season, it can be particularly informative as we get to October, November. You know, those preseason power rankings are, you know, a little bit more obsolete as we have actual data to work around with. But, you know, on paper, you know, just you look at the Pythagorean stuff, you know, the points differential stuff, the power ratings of the teams that are on the Cardinals schedule this year. And like you said, you lop in the fact that they are playing in a gauntlet of an NFC West. Like, you could pretty easily see them going 0-6 in division. They do play, you know, a last place schedule this year, but, you know, how much is that really going to help them? And some of the last place teams from a year ago are expected to improve by a good bit. You know, like you look at teams like the Saints that are honestly a decent bet to be one of those teams to go from worst to first within their own division. So like, it's not like they're getting a whole lot of breaks along the way. The fantasy market seems to love the Cardinals. You know, they've got big name players like McBride, Jeremiah Love, Harrison, Wilson, all that stuff. And they have like a good playoff schedule for fantasy. But as far as their actual, you know, real life stuff that we care about, it's a gauntlet pretty much every single week. And you can see them, I believe, if you look at the entirety of the season, they're underdogs in every game and big underdogs in a lot of them.
I'm looking at week 15, home against the Jets. I'm looking at week 17, home against the Raiders. Those are going to be the big ones. Those are the games you're circling, I think, right now, if you are the Arizona Cardinals. Talking with John McKechnie, one of our NFL experts from RotoWire, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. John, you also have an early win total that you like for us, an under in the AFC South.
I think Indianapolis comes back to earth a little bit this year. I did some digging on this and, you know, looked at the implied points per game for every team that this year and compared that to their points per game from a year ago. And the odds makers have Indianapolis as one of the biggest regressors as far as points per game this season. Now, that's not everything. Could their defense improve? Like, sure. And Daniel Jones, if he stays healthy the whole season, blah, blah, blah. But I think that this is an offense that was kind of catching people off guard, catching people by surprise, I think, through the first 2-3 months of the season last year, all the way up through Daniel Jones's injury. And I just, are we really trusting Daniel Jones to do that again? Like, do we think that he has that kind of Sam Darnold mold where he is, you know, kind of been through the ringer and finally figured it out to this extent where he can really keep this Indianapolis team not only afloat, but being a driving force for them being a real competitor in the AFC or in the AFC South, at least. So I think that I'm with the odds makers in the sense that this offense is going to be markedly worse this year. Michael Pittman, I think, is a big loss that they didn't really make up for this offseason, in my opinion. Is a very thin receiving depth chart that they have there. They might kind of have to miscast Josh Downs a little bit. Alec Pierce coming off of the offseason ankle injury and ankle surgery. Jonathan Taylor has played exactly one full season dating back to 2021. A lot of things broke right for this Indianapolis team. A lot of things might go the other way for them this year. I like under 7.5 for them.
Yeah, including schedule in terms of what broke right last year and might not break right this year. Ravens, Chiefs, Texans to begin the season. Eek, that could be a rough one there. John, you've got a Super Bowl exacta bet you wanted to tout.
Yeah, this one is Chalk City, but the odds are appealing, if nothing else. Like, you can get 42-1 on the two teams that are the big favorites to make the Super Bowl with the Los Angeles Rams and the Buffalo Bills. I have the Bills beating the Rams, and you can get 42-1 on that market over at DraftKings. Again, I just think that the Bills have been knocking on the door for so long, and I am not a fan of the Buffalo Bills by any means, but I think it'd be disingenuous for me to say that this is a team that's not going to make it to the Super Bowl at any point under Josh Allen's tenure. I think the time is now. I think they got a little bit better this offseason as far as adding DJ Moore to that mix. They were really kind of missing a true alpha number one receiver. It obviously just hasn't worked out with Keon Coleman there. They spent a big draft pick on a couple of years ago. They have that figured out a little bit. James Cook has been rocking out each of these last couple of seasons. The defense is good. We'll see if the defense can kind of like, you know, remesh on the fly without Sean McDermott, because he was, you know, able to get so much out of that particular unit. So that's the only real question mark to me. But Josh Allen, I think, is just kind of playing on another level from every other quarterback in the league. And the Rams, it's been a rich get richer type of offseason for them. They bring in Myles Garrett. They basically get the Chiefs secondary, which was a huge problem for them last year, the cornerback personnel, get that shored up. The tea leaves are telling us that Aaron Donald is going to be back as well. And he doesn't seem like a guy that's just been sitting on the couch since retiring. So I feel like he's going to be a difference maker. I have a hard time seeing anyone unseating the Rams in the NFC. And ultimately, I think Josh Allen gets his ring this year. And if those two teams make it 42-1, I dig it.
There's no shortage of betting opportunities this summer, from daily Major League Baseball, World Cup soccer, even NBA Summer League, to the countdown to football season. And that's why now is the perfect time to lock in VSiN's football special for just $175. It'll get you full VSiN Pro access all the way through the Super Bowl, including our all-new 2026 NFL betting guide to help you attack futures, win totals, division races, and the upcoming season. Plus, you'll get daily best bets, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop projections, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app, and coverage of every major sport all year long. And remember, the earlier you sign up, the more value you get. Head over to vsin.com/subscribe right now. That's vsin.com/subscribe. Chat with our friend John McKechnie from rotowire.com. John, you are a college football expert as well as an NFL analyst for us at RotoWire. So let's get a couple plays on the board for college football. Let's just start at the top here, right? Winning the national championship. You're looking at the Miami Hurricanes at 11-1. So what's the case?
I'm fairly surprised to see where they are in the national championship odds pecking order. They're seventh, according to the odds makers. They're behind Indiana. They're behind, of course, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Texas, Oregon, and Georgia as well. But, I mean, Miami was right there on the doorstep last year, and I think they got better this offseason. I know that they lose a lot on the defensive side, but they bring in Damon Wilson, who's going to, you know, be a monster off the edge for them. So I think the defense isn't going to fall off that much. And I think they improved offensively. I think Darian Mensa is absolutely the real deal. I think he's a guy that we're going to be talking about as a top 10, maybe even top 5 pick come next spring. Transfer out of Duke by way of Tulane. And they bring in his security blanket, Cooper Barkate, who had a ton of catches at Duke last year. This is going to be a great offense. You also already have Malachi Toney, and you have Mark Fletcher, who broke out in the backfield last year. You play an ACC schedule. The ACC is, to call it top heavy is almost disingenuous, because it's Miami and then nobody else. Nobody else is even remotely in that national title conversation. So they're going to have a cakewalk through the regular season. Maybe that works against them because they won't be as battle tested as some of those teams up there at the top, but they will be very rested come playoff time. I'm a big believer in this Canes team. I think that Mario Cristobal is building something serious down there in Coral Gables. I like Miami, especially at those 11-1 odds.
John McKechnie, great stuff as always. You can find all of his work over at rotowire.com. Check out his latest best ball article. Again, find that at RotoWire. Use that code VSIN over at rotowire.com. Get yourself 15% off anything we offer. We are, less than an hour and a half away from the start of World Cup action today. We're going to have Adam Zdrowicz breaking it all down for us when we come back. This is Prop Points here on VSIN.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to RotoWire's version of Prop Points. It's the three RotoWire hosts here, myself, Nick Whalen, and our next guest joining us on the Progressive Guest Line, Adam Zdrowicz. He runs all of our soccer and college basketball coverage over at RotoWire. Follow him on Twitter at RotoZdrowicz. Adam, welcome back from vacation. Welcome back. We had some wild quarterfinal games. Semifinals are set. We've got the first game today in a couple hours, Spain versus France. Many are saying it is the default final. I don't know if I'd go that far. What say you on that? Are these the two strongest teams in the tournament?
default final. We always hear about that, especially in the NCAA tournament. It's always, oh, okay, this is the better semifinal, so this is actually the real final. And then something crazy happens in the final where, oh, actually, maybe this isn't the default final, kind of a thing. People will say that. I think I've actually said that, and it makes sense. France and Spain, I think, arguably have looked like the best teams in this World Cup. England kind of scraping by their last couple matchups. Argentina, team of destiny with Messi. So you could say that, yeah, France and Spain, maybe this is the default final. But at the end of the day, if it's England or Argentina winning, either one of those teams could win. I mean, we're in a spot, this final four here, where any team could actually win it, because Messi, we've seen what happens with Argentina. Anything can happen in these Messi games. Anything can happen. And England still has the players. Even though if they haven't looked like an elite team, they still have the players that can beat either France or Spain. So at the end of the day, default final, sure, if you want to say that. But I think either Argentina or England can actually win the World Cup here.
Well, Adam, default final or not, we're going to need some plays for the first game of the day. We're about 90 minutes away, or I should say the only game of the day, about 90 minutes away from Spain, France. So how are we playing this one? Do you like any props? Are you on a money line? You might have to get a little bit creative as we get deeper into the tournament. So what's going to be on the card today?
This is mostly a value play, though. I've been on Spain since before the tournament, and it's all about the value getting in with Spain. You can take them money line to win. They're plus 210 to win this in 90 minutes. This has kind of dropped in the last 24, 48 hours. My preferred bet, though, would be Spain to advance, so that includes extra time, PKs. They're plus 120. Again, that dropped. I looked at it last night, plus 125. And I think if you look at these teams before the tournament, probably pretty even. I think the future odds in terms of winning the World Cup, I think Spain were actually above France in terms of the overall odds. And then a couple of results happened. France has looked really good. Their attack has looked really good. But if you look at what France has actually done in the tournament and the teams they played, and when you compare it against the teams that Spain played, I think that's kind of the difference in kind of going in the public's head. It's like, okay, France, Sweden, they played against Sweden, they played against Paraguay, they played against Morocco. Three matchups that all pretty favored France in all of them, and they weren't really tested in any of them. Whereas Spain, I think you could argue their three matchups a little more difficult. Austria, and then the Portugal game. Portugal, people were saying, you know, one of the better midfields in the tournament, and then the Belgium game, the last one. So I think some of the odds are just kind of skewed a little bit, at least for the public, that it's heavier on France, minus 150 to advance. I think that's too much. I think this should be pretty even. I mean, depending how you want to include the VIG here, we could be looking at minus 110, minus 120 for each of these sides to advance. Instead, it's a little skewed to France. So I'm just going to play the value. I think these teams are pretty even. I think Spain's midfield and their defense has enough to win the game as well. So I like the value, plus 120 for Spain to advance.
What sort of pace do we expect in this sort of game? Spain, you know, famously hadn't conceded until last game against Belgium. You know, a lot of their scoring comes late. The Portugal game came late. The game winner against Belgium came very late as well. They haven't, you know, they had the famously open with the 0-0 draw. So they haven't had a whole lot of high scoring, wide open games. What do you expect in this game against France? Are they going to have to open it up a little bit more?
Yeah, I think especially in a semifinal, I'm not sure the first 45 either team is really going to have to open things up. I think once you get so late in these tournaments that it's going to be a little safer. They're going to be a little tentative, and so you don't open up your defense, kind of a thing, especially when you have Mbappe and the France attack on the other side. So I think it's still going to be – it's going to lean towards a little more of Spain with possession, moving the ball around, and then France will eventually start to press them, start to – turn over the ball, start to get counters and get Dembele, Mbappe on the run, that kind of a thing. That's kind of when they're at their best. So I think that Spain or France are going to be fine with not holding on the ball as much as they have in these prior matchups. Again, I mentioned the games they played against Morocco and Paraguay, especially where they just dominated possession. The other team kind of ceded possession to them. And those were the teams hoping to go on the counter. Whereas I think this is going to be a different matchup here for France, where they're going to be the team pressing. They're going to be the team going on the counter. And I think that the difference here with Spain compared to some of those other teams that France played also, Spain has a bunch of guys who are comfortable with the ball. They're fine passing the ball around. So I think in the first half will be pretty slow. And if one team gets a goal early in that first half, then that's when we'll see things start to open up. But I wouldn't be surprised if we go into halftime, maybe it's scoreless, and maybe the first 20 minutes, it's still a little tentative. And then maybe some substitutes come in, and that's when things kind of speed up a little bit. But I think it's going to be a low kind of shot game, where we've seen France have these games where they're, you know, 20 plus shots kind of thing. I think both teams will probably be under 15 shots, is saying a lot. I think it wouldn't be surprising if they're 10 to 12 shots for both these teams, where it's going to be more about efficiency. Can these teams score from their limited opportunities? So I think it'll be a little slower, but it'll fall down to which team actually scores, and then that'll open the thing up. That'll open the game up, that kind of a thing.
So tomorrow, Adam, we get the other semifinal, England-Argentina in Atlanta. England a -135 favorite on the money line. And as you mentioned, kind of scary to bet against this Argentina team with the way they've been able to climb back multiple times throughout the tournament. But is this where the run comes to an end for Messi?
I think it does. It's also the most difficult matchup. Of course, we're in the semifinals, so obviously it is going to be the most difficult matchup here for these teams. But Argentina are another team that have had a pretty favorable run to get here. And you compare it to what England has actually had to go through, Mexico City against Mexico, the heat in Miami in the last game. And now this one's indoors. So you throw that edge for England, because England haven't really looked that good. Their midfield has kind of fallen apart. Declan Rice came off after 45. He had an illness going into that last game. Apparently he's still not 100% fit, but when he went out of that game, England couldn't really figure out how to play in the midfield. I think that part is going to be very important. If Declan Rice can actually be above 90%, if he can actually start, if he can go close to 90 minutes, I think that's going to be the edge to England right there. Because I think that the Argentina midfield, we'll see how they line up. Some of their guys are a little older. And this matchup specifically, for their fullbacks, I think goes to England. Because Anthony Gordon, one thing he does well, we've seen in the last couple games, is speed. He gets back defensively, but especially his speed on the wing. And then Saka, if he starts for England, his speed as well. They're going to be attacking those fullbacks for Argentina. That's one area where I don't think they've been fully attacked consistently every game. I know Switzerland had an advantage there against Argentina last game, but that red card kind of threw that strategy out the door. So I like England's overall squad. And also these players, they're somewhat familiar. And Messi didn't play in the Premier League or anything, but guys like Gehi, Stones, these guys have been around. They've seen the talent of Messi before. They know what he can do. And I think if Messi gets limited, I'm going to be on actually going a little higher here. England, money line in 90 minutes. It's plus 165, it looks like right now.
Excellent stuff. Let's talk a little Golden Boot here real quick. We got a little time. Pretty much five players in the race. Mbappe is at 8 goals. Messi's at 8 goals. Harry Kane and Jude Bellingham are at 6-0. I think down to 4 pretty much here. Do you have a favorite? Is there any value in doing a long shot like Bellingham, who seems like ascendant at this point in time?
You could go Bellingham. I still like Harry Kane a little bit, plus 1,100. Yeah, Mbappe's minus 145, Messi plus 160. You have the third place game, so these teams are guaranteed the third place game, and the third place game can have more goals than the final. I think that's the one thing you can look at. So I know I just said England, you know, to win, of course, all that, but I just like the value here because we've seen Bellingham get his couple goals in these last couple games. Kane is still on PKs for England, and it wouldn't be surprising if maybe more defensive focus is on Kane making his late or on Bellingham making his late runs, and that leaves Kane a little more room than he's had. So Kane plus 1,100. I just like the value here. I'm not going to take Mbappe at minus 145. It's not as fun. Also, Messi at plus 160. That one's not as fun either. So Kane plus 1,100 there.
There you have it. Adam Zadruk, great stuff from our soccer guy over at RotoWire. Follow him on Twitter. Read him at RotoWire. Use that promo code VEASAN to get 15% off any RotoWire subscription. We're going to do NFC Futures when we come back. This is Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Football season is right around the corner, and DraftKings is bringing you their biggest best ball contest ever. We're talking a massive $20 million in total prizes, making this the largest best ball tournament in DraftKings history. And this year, not just one, but three players will walk away as millionaires. And right now, our partners at DraftKings are giving all customers a can't-miss offer. Draft one, get one. Enter a lineup in the $20 million best ball contest for just $25, and you'll receive a bonus best ball ticket to play again free for a share of $20 million, giving you a second shot to be crowned a millionaire. It's simple. Just draft your team once, no weekly management required, and let your top scorers automatically start each week. All season long, every breakout star, every clutch play, every touchdown counts towards your shot at a share of $20 million. Download the DraftKings Daily Fantasy app and enter a lineup in the $20 million best ball contest for just $25 to get a bonus ticket to play free for another shot to win big. That's two shots without ever setting your lineups again in DraftKings' biggest best ball contest ever. Draft one, get one, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours in partnership with DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. 18 plus in most states. Restrictions apply. One per customer. Enter the Best Ball 20 Million Headliner Contest to get one bonus entry. $25 entry fee required. Reward expires at contest lock on September 9th, 2026. See terms at DraftKings.com/promotions. Sponsored by DraftKings. Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson back with you. It's Prop Points here on VSiN. And Jeff, we're going to dive back in on some NFL divisional futures. We got through a few divisions yesterday in the AFC. We still have the AFC West, and then we'll move on to the NFC. But let's go out West right now, where we have the tightest top three in terms of the odds to win this division. KC plus 160, the LA Chargers plus 190, Denver plus 225. The Las Vegas Raiders do still play in this division. They are 20-1, not even close, by the way, to the longest division long shot. That would be the Arizona Cardinals at 100-1 to win the NFC West. But I think we could focus on that top three. Given those values, Jeff, and given how tight the top of this division projects to be, where is the value if you're betting the AFC West right now?
I think it's with the Broncos, the team that won it last year. They added Jalen Waddle. They added a component to their offense that they didn't have last year, I feel like. I like Cortland Sutton, as good as a player as he is, Waddle brings an explosive element in the mid-game that I just don't think they had last season. I think it's going to do wonders for Bo Nix. I think the big question for Bo Nix is, what is his status health-wise? That serious ankle injury he suffered in the game, the last play of the game in the win over the Bills, what sort of quarterback is he? Because I think mobility is very important to his game. And if you take that away from him, can he survive as a pocket passer? I'm not quite sure about that. Adding Waddle certainly helps. That defense is going to be stout. They had, they really didn't have a whole lot of transition. Lost one player on their defensive line, but they had plenty of depth there to begin with. As the third betting favorite there, I'll take that price there. I like that price quite a bit.
Let's head over to the NFC East, Jeff, where things get really interesting here. We have Philly, of course, as your favorite at plus 115, Dallas plus 235. But both of the other teams in this division, I think at least on the fringes of this divisional race, Washington plus 480, New York Giants 6-1 to win the NFC East, a division that we know is very difficult to win back to back, although the Eagles have done it each of the last 2 years. I think the first question we have to ask, though, Jeff, is, where do you draw the line? Like how much are you in on Washington or the Giants as a real contender in the NFC East?
So I'm not a buyer on the Giants yet. I think they need longer odds for me to buy in on that price there. Yeah, John Harbaugh is great. I like the overhaul that they're doing there. I think it'll take a while for the roster to come around so that it gets to that point in time. Namely, I don't think the run defense is going to be that great. The Dexter Lawrence trade made sense for them. I think it was a good trade for them. And, hey, you get Arvell Reese there. That's great. I like what they've added. And yet I still don't think they can stop the run at all. And I think the offense still has a lot of question marks. When are we going to see Malik Nabers? What version of Jackson Dart are we going to get? I think he might be a better fantasy quarterback than a real life quarterback, for instance, there. I think this is probably at least a year away from being the type of team that that can really contend for the division.
This is still the Eagles for me, Jeff, even though they, you know, again, mm-hmm. they won it back to back in 24 and 25. Prior to that, there was a 20-year span where no team accomplished that feat. We have not had a three-peat winner in quite some time in this division, but look, I'm with you on the Giants. I think they could be a frisky team. I think they could potentially be a wild card team if things break right. I don't think they're winning this division. You know, Washington, to me, we've seen the two extremes over the first 2 years of Jaden Daniels' career. Everything went right a couple years ago. Everything went wrong last year. I think they probably settle somewhere in the middle. This is still a roster to me that needs a lot of work in terms of kind of rebuilding it to match the future of Jaden Daniels. And with Dallas, look, I like a lot of the pieces, but we do the song and dance with the Cowboys every single year. So I'm optimistic that getting AJ Brown out of Philadelphia, you know, does it maybe lower your ceiling a little bit offensively? I think you could make that case. I think it just makes you a more normal team. I think we will get a less drama-filled season for the Philadelphia Eagles. And I'm really curious to see, you know, how much of a leap can Devontae Smith really make? One of the greatest college receivers in the history of college football. He's always kind of been pigeonholed as this number two guy in the NFL. But, you know, he's somebody we've seen rise up fantasy boards ever since the A.J. Brown trade officially went through.
Yeah, lots of helium on Devontae Smith, and for good reason. I think we know he's going to be the main guy. I think this all comes down to Jalen Hurts, and it comes down to new offensive coordinator Sean Mannion. First time he's ever called plays. Are they going to click? Is that going to work out? Because, yeah, Devontae Smith is now up to wide receiver 13. You have to choose between him and, like, George Pickens, Rashee Rice, Chris Olave in that range. And maybe he compares favorably. You know, 3 years ago, he probably did compare to that, you know, to that lot there. I'm very intrigued on that one there. I do believe in what Dallas did. I love the process in hiring Christian Parker as their new defensive coordinator. But I also think it's a really tough schedule, and I don't know if they did the same sort of personnel changes that the Bengals did, for instance, you know, who got Lawrence, who spent in free agency. You know, for the Cowboys, I feel like it's a lot of discounted prices on some guys that were maybe, you know, discounted for a reason. Rashawn Gary, you know, for instance, is a good point there. Dee Winters really struggled in San Francisco. Is he really going to start for the Cowboys? I love adding Caleb Downs, especially the kind of I love where they got him in the draft. I mean, I know it's not about value. It's about the player himself, but I like that. I think Kobe Durant's a good ad for them as well. Is it enough? This was the 32 ranked, i.e. last defense, according to defensive DVOA last year, even worse than the Bengals, you know, worst defense in football last year. So we'll see how much can they improve. Is the 15th ranked defense, the 18th ranked defense, is that enough? It might be.
High bar to clear in that division with how consistent the Philadelphia Eagles have been. Let's hit the NFC North, Jeff. Very simple question to lead this one off. Is this the best division in the NFL in 2026 from top to bottom?
Yeah, it might be. I think you got four solid teams, but also solid question marks for each team. I think it's really intriguing for, you know, the Vikings, obviously, Kyler Murray. You know, what version of Kyler Murray are we going to get? How much of an improvement is he going to be over J.J. McCarthy? How much of the problem was that Vikings offensive line last year? But, I look at the Lions. They're the team I'm focusing the most on here, because last year they had the Frank Ragnow retirement surprise in June, and I think it wrecked their season. I think you lose your center, especially an all-pro unicorn center like Ragnow, given his size, how he just moved people. You know, they couldn't replace that on the fly after the draft, after free agency. They had a June surprise this year with Terrion Arnold. I don't think that hurts them nearly as much. And their schedule, so much better this year. Last year, they had a nasty schedule. This year, I love that schedule.
They get the NFC South. They get the AFC East. They get the Cardinals, Titans, and Giants as their non-rotation games. I was looking through this the other day. You know, they play Buffalo in week two. They play New England in mid-November. That's a neutral site game in Germany. I think their toughest non-division game outside of those might be home against Tampa Bay. You know, they have to go to Atlanta. I mean, that's what we're talking about. This is a really, really soft schedule. I think that's going to be a huge narrative that follows this Lions team throughout the season. I put it in the VSiN NFL betting guide. I think the Vikings can make the playoffs. I don't think they're winning the division. I think that's still Detroit for me. And I think there's value on that number right now at plus 180. Let's finish the show off, Jeff, with our best bets of the night. And I know you may have something on this Detroit Lions team.
Yeah, I may not know the division, but I love the 10.5 wins. Minus 110 over at DraftKings. Yeah, we talked about all the reasons why. I love that over bet on the wins.
I'll get you some for NBA Summer League today. Nuggets money line going up against OKC, minus 102. Denver's well-rested, haven't played since Saturday, but really this is more about fading the OKC Thunder. OKC's been terrible in Vegas. They were terrible in the Utah Summer League, 0-5 overall. This Nuggets team, we talked about them a little bit earlier in Summer League, one of the oldest rosters there. I think this is a high-floor team, giving the Nuggets to beat the Thunder later today. Money moves, Stormy, JVT, coming your way next. Keep it locked. This is VSiN.